Hey there. Welcome back to the Bernie Miklas Show here on my YouTube channel. Thanks for your support as always. Please subscribe if you haven't. Let your friends, family, neighbors know. And they can count on Cardinals Talk all offseason because the audience response to Cardinals Talk is huge in numbers. And I'm going to give the peoples what they want. And besides this, even though the Cardinals are down and people are ticked off at them, it's still a very passionate baseball town. In fact, people have a lot of strong opinions about what should be done next, right? It doesn't mean the interest level goes away in terms of content, discussion, debate. People may not have wanted to show up at Busch Stadium with the tickets that they had with a lot of no-shows last season. But that's a different kind of interest. Now the Cardinals are moving into a rebuild mode, a retooling mode, whatever the heck you want to call it. But it's a different time, and we're all curious about all the issues facing the team. And that's why I'm here to provide a lot of videos for you on that topic, because there's always fresh material. Anyway, I'm going to continue with my series that I started a little while ago and let it slide for a little bit. My apologies. But looking at Cardinals trade candidates this coming off season, I've already done a video on Ryan Helsley as a trade candidate, real attractive trade candidate, I would think, given that he's got one more year before free agency and his value is high now after 49 saves. There's always a chance for an injury, so you better sell high, as they say. I discussed Sonny Gray, the possibility of trading him. He does have a no-trade contract. He wants to stay close to Nashville, but there are some places he might want to consider, or he might want to stay as a Cardinal. Wilson Contreras has a no-trade contract, and the Cardinals have to consider that if they can get a good offer for him. They would save some money and also open up playing time at catcher for Ivan Herrera and Pedro Páez, and then Jimmy Crooks is on the way as well. Maybe not as soon as 2025, but he is on the way. Good prospect. I'm a Contreras fan. I think his offense is outstanding. I think his defense has gotten better. It's still below average, but not in a way that really damages the team in a significant manner or even a meaningful manner. So I have mixed feelings about a trade that would send Wilson Contreras out of here with 3 years left on his contract. But if he doesn't want to be here and the Cardinals feel they can get a decent or good offer for him, they have to at least consider it. That's all I'm saying. That one's way up in the air to me. And he does have the no trade. I think I mentioned that. All right, today we're going to talk about Nolan Arenado. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think there's much to debate here. I think this is an easy choice. The easy choice, though, doesn't mean you can trade him because he has full no-trade protection. And he's not going to waive that unless he gets a chance to join a team that has been winning, will continue to win, and has a legitimate chance to compete for a pennant or World Series championship. He wants to go to a place to get away from the losing, and he has said, you know, his career clock is ticking, and he doesn't know how much more time he'll have left. I mean, the end of his contract is 2027. After that, who knows? But certainly, and I'll get into this, but certainly you would think Nolan Arenado would welcome a trade if it gets him aligned with a winning club that has championship aspirations in the near future. So let's walk through this, though, because I think there's a lot of ground to cover, and I want to do it. I've put some work in to just get all my things in order here. Got many notes. What else is new, right? All right, Arenado's going to turn 34 in April. He's clearly in an age-related decline, and the phase is not going to get any better. The numbers will continue to go down, down, down. Almost certainly will get worse. He can put up some solid numbers. I'm not saying that he's useless. He's got some value. But at what cost, given what they owe him? More on his contract later in this video. In 2022, Arenado finished third in the National League MVP voting. As you know, he also won a Gold Glove and a Silver Slugger. Homered 30 times, hit 100 and drove in 103 runs. He slugged 533. He hit a home run every 18 and a half at bats, 18.5 at bats, based on adjusted OPS. Arenado in 2022 performed 51% above league average offensively. Remember that, 51% above league average offensively. And that season, he also, even though Paul Goldschmidt won the Most Valuable Player Award, not, and not saying he shouldn't have, but in terms of wins above replacement, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that's the perfect metric. I don't, but it just gives you a good idea of a player's all-around value because it takes in base running, defense, and offense. That season, 2022, Arenado only finished second in the majors to Aaron Judge in wins above replacement. So in terms of value in 2022, the case could be made that he was the second most valuable player in terms of just performance, not awards, performance, with what he does in all phases of the game. So he basically hit a peak there. And little did we know that that decline was about to set in. So over the last two seasons, clearly the decline has set in. It has kicked in. I just mentioned how he was 51% above league average offensively in 2022 and how he homered every 18.5 at-bats and how he was second in wins above replacement. I just wanted to put that in your mind because now we're going to compare it. So let's take 23 and 24 seasons combined. Arenado was only 4% over the last two seasons. It's only been 4% above league average offensively. So he was 51% above in 2022. Last two seasons, only 4% above average. And he, his slugging percentage compared to 2022 over the last two seasons, his slugging percentage is down 107 points. And instead of homering every 18.5 at bats, he has homered every 27 at bats the last 2 years. And in wins above replacement, I told you he was second in the majors in 2022. Over the last two seasons, he ranks 55th, and six major league third basemen have generated more wins above replacement value than Arenado since the start of 2023. After averaging 5.6 wins above replacement, which is outstanding, from 2015 through 2022, Arenado has averaged only 2.9 wins above replacement over the last two seasons. So here's another way to put it. Compared to his previous standards that were in place for a long time, Arenado has lost more than half of his all-around value based on wins above replacement. Again, you don't have to buy wins above replacement. I'm just giving you a snapshot look that I believe may not be entirely accurate, but it very much gets you right there in the ballpark. Let's talk about Arenado's defense at third base. In 2022, he won the 10th Gold Glove of his career. He didn't win one in 23, and though he is a finalist in 2024, I'd be really surprised if he has if he's going to win the thing, because frankly, the other third basemen in the National League that have been nominated have a much stronger case. They're more deserving. Arenado has bounced back a little bit defensively last year. I thought he was better than he was in 2023. But again, you got to look at the big picture. He's not getting any younger. He's going to be 34 in April. And even though he bounced back a bit defensively last year, and that's good, tip of the cap and all that, it pales compared to his peak level defense. Let me give you the background on that. From 2013, that's when he came to the big leagues, through 2022, Arenado averaged nearly 16 defensive runs saved per season. That is a huge amount. His overall total on defensive runs saved during those 10 seasons, he had 60 more defensive runs saved than any third baseman in the majors over that time. But over the last two seasons, Nolan Arenado has averaged just 3.5 defensive runs saved. 16, 3.5. Does that sound like the same glove guy to you? No, it's a long way down, even though he's above average, and that's good. So that's that. Let's talk about his contract. And we're going to, well, let me do that in a minute. I'll get to that at the end, because that's a big part of this. So Arenado has had a career that is high on individual awards and accolades, and he's deserved them. I mean, he has been a preeminent player. He's been a prominent player. He's been a prestigious player. He's been elite player for a long, long time. But truthfully, and we all know this, he's no longer that player. I said earlier in the video, yeah, he could probably give you a couple more solid seasons, league average seasons, maybe a little bit above average seasons. But again, they're paying a lot of money for that. And if they can move the contract, it makes sense. But there are other factors here. He's played 12 big league seasons. His teams, the Rockies and the Cardinals, have made the playoffs 5 times in 12 years. When Arenado has competed in the postseason with the two teams, the Rockies and the Cardinals are 1-7 in his 8 games, 1-7. In his 8 career postseason games, Arenado has hit .152 with a homer, 3 RBIs, and a 27% strikeout rate. In 3 postseason games as a Cardinal, 1-12 with no runs batted in and 1 run scored. Now, here's a stat that is interesting to me. I have a curious mind, and I go looking for stuff because I'm like, you know, Rockies were really bad most of the time. The Cardinals were really bad in 2023. And he's really gone through a lot of losing. And I was just curious. I was just curious about that. So I went on a little search. I do this because you don't have to worry about it. I am at your service with these type of things. Anyway. And I don't think this is fair to Arenado, but again, I find it interesting because the fact that he's lost so much, to me, enters into the decision whether you want him to be here when they're about to begin a rebuild and they're going to go with young players. All right. Since the start of 2013, that's when he came to the majors, his team's regular season have lost 851 games when he's in the starting lineup. Well, what does that mean? Okay, no major league player has been a part of more losing games as a starting player than Arenado over the last 12 seasons. Is that fair to him? No, not really. When you play 12 seasons, first of all, you're going to win a lot of games, but you're also going to lose a lot of games unless you're playing for a dynasty team. And Arenado was truly he was a starter on some truly horrendous teams in Colorado, as well as an awful Cardinals team in 2023. He's had a fantastic career individually, and I can't sit here and say a guy that's piled up all the gold, as in gloves, and all the silver, as in silver sluggers, and gotten all kinds of MVP votes. In fact, there's 5 years, and there were 5 seasons in Colorado, even he was playing for bad clubs. You know, he got MVP votes in 5 different seasons. So it's kind of stupid to blame him for all that losing. Now, what he's done in the postseason or what he has not done in the postseason, it's a small sample, but that is also fair game. Those stats are on the table, and they're awful, and you just leave it at that. Nothing else to say. He has not, when he's had a chance to compete in the postseason, which is why he wanted to be in St. Louis, he's failed. There's no other way to put it. But I don't think he should take the rap for all the losing. So you might be wondering, well, then why did you bring it up? You know, if he's not to blame, he shares some responsibility. But if you're a big star, an accomplished star, like in Colorado on some lousy teams, you're not the reason they were lousy teams. That's what I'm trying to say. And even though Arenado's performance declined in 2023, I don't think he was one of the top reasons why the Cardinals lost 91 games. He didn't help as much as he has in the past, but it's kind of a cop-out to say, well, you know, he's at fault. I think a lot of people shared the blame for that, right? So, again, I'm going to repeat. You might be asking, so why are you bringing this up then if you think it's unfair to mention he's started more losing games than any player in a big league since 2013? Why is it fair? Well, this will all make sense to you if you are questioning that. he doesn't handle losing well because he's had a lot of losing. He's gotten punched around, punched in the gut, kicked in the knees, mentally worn down with losing, even if it's not his fault. He still was part of 813 losing games since 2013. And he's the kind of guy, he's very intense. He burns hot. That he does not handle losing well. Not that anybody should, right? I'm not, who wants someone around that's comfortable with losing? But it's not, that's not the whole story with Arenado. As I've said so many times, when his teams, and we've seen it in St. Louis, when his teams are getting smacked around and they're losing a lot of games and they're in a rut and it's not going to make the playoffs and you know, you're kind of, it's garbage time late in the season and all that, nothing's at stake. He radiates a lot, and I mean a lot of negative energy. And if you were honest in what you have seen, just watching games, the body language, not good. Just not good. Now, I think he tried second half of last season. He had a talk with himself about, you know, he's got to step up as a leader and he's got to start trying to help these young players. And, you know, that's nice. But I don't know. Am I a bad person to say, well, why did you wait? Come in here with Mr. Contract, one of the most acclaimed players of his generation. The town's excited. The team's excited. The young guys are excited. You're their teammate. They're one of their stars. So why wouldn't you extend yourself to young teammates and try to help them through their problems when they come to advice? Why are you putting a wall around yourself? And he would wall things off, especially during bad times, right? So if the Cardinals are entering a rebuild or whatever the heck you want to call it, if they're entering one of these phases where their success will be limited, and that's a polite way to put it, they may be in for two losing seasons, two or three mediocre seasons, whatever. They don't have any kind of championship aspirations in the near future. He's got the clock running out on his career, or it's winding down on his career. And so for him to be in this atmosphere, he came here because he thought he'd be in the postseason every year. And he thought he would have the first time in his career multiple chances, not to just make the playoffs, but to go on a run and have a chance to win a pennant, win a World Series. You know, that was the appeal to come to St. Louis. But that window has closed for now. You know, it's kind of like you go by a business and it's like, they're closed, you know, closed for reconstruction, or they're closed for repairs or whatever, you know. And then you say, oh, well, we'll come back in a while. Well, the Cardinals, it might be 2 years, might be 3 years. I don't know. But the point is, to have him in that environment when he's looking at the clock, I'm 34 in 2025. I'll be 35 in 2026. I'll be 36 in 2027. And I'm going to be stuck in the middle of this, a rebuild that I never envisioned would happen once I got to St. Louis. Does that sound like a good fit to you? Seriously, let's be truthful about this. Does that sound like a good fit for the kind of team and environment they're going to have over the next 2+ years? I don't think it is. I don't think that environment is good for him, and it's not good for the team in terms of him being in the middle of it. And if he wants to try to help young players, good. But you'll have to excuse me if I tell you, when I tell you, I don't really trust that. Because if the Cardinals like get off to a horrible start in 2025, hypothetical, and they're really not good, and they really never are in any kind of race for anything, they just kind of go, what? He's going to be Mr. Upbeat. He's going to be Mr. Positive Energy, Mr. Rah-Rah, Mr. Oh, I'm so thrilled to be a Cardinal. I mean, does anybody think that, right? No matter what he says, and no matter how many people in the media are happy to spread, to kind of take that spin and move it all around and let people know, oh, he's really tried. He's really tried to be a better teammate. Okay. When did he get here? Oh, that's right. 2021. What year is it now? 2024. So second half of his third, 21, 22. No, I'm sorry. The second half of his fourth season here, it occurred to him maybe he should try to help the young guys out. Do you want me to, do we want what? Should I try to arrange some kind of award ceremony for that? Maybe get some medal around the neck? Whoo! I tell you what, some of these players who go through hard times or not very good, or they kind of got a sour attitude or whatever, that, you know, they should drop down on their knees every night and give thanks that they play in St. Louis in terms of the media. Because Arenado, if this stuff had been happening in another place, he'd be getting pounded. But here, you give people a little spin. Let me write that down. All right, I'm being a jerk. I've been guilty of that in the past too, so shame on me for being a hypocrite. This is not a guy you want around doing a rebuilding phase. That's all I'm trying to say. They're going to be a younger team. We know that, according to the Post-Dispatch. Arenado has complained about there being too many young guys in the clubhouse. Well, he ain't seen nothing yet. His decline offensively and defensively have also left him very frustrated. That's part of it. It isn't just the losing. So on top of the losing, you have a guy that's going to be 34 in April. And for the first time in his career, everything that he's used to doing really, really well, and it would come, he worked his tail off, but because of his talent, it would come to him rather easily compared to his average players. I mean, Arenado, a very, very gifted player. So the game, he made the game look easy, even though he had to work his tail off to get to that level. But man, as they say, pardon the cliche, you know, Father Time is undefeated. Every athlete at some point, they reach that curve. And there, you get to a point where there's no return. There's no way back up, right? And he's in that now. So if you combine the frustration with the over his personal decline as a hitter, I should say, and a fielder, as well as the decline in terms of the team's possibility of winning a division, playing postseason ball, I mean, that's, like I said, that's kind of on hold for now. That's not a good combination. You got a guy in decline who's frustrated as could be, and he came here to win, and now they're rebuilding. Not a good combination, right? Do we agree? I think so. He wanted to be here to win, and he wanted to be here to maybe capture that dream of a pennant, a World Series. Does it make sense to trade him? Of course. It's an obvious answer. It's an obvious answer, but there's a couple more things to it. The Cardinals also have some young guys who can play third base, and frankly, the team would be better off to open up that position. You'll remember, most of you, Nolan Gorman was a third baseman. The Cardinals got Arenado, and it's like, well, better move him to second. Made sense. I'm not saying they did something stupid. They didn't. That was the logical thing to do. Jordan Walker, third baseman. And I've had mixed reports on his performance as a third baseman in the minors. Maybe some of you, and he wasn't in the minors that long. I know some of you probably had a chance to see him, and you know more about it than I do. So please enlighten the rest of us about his level of play at third base. But from what I have been told, he was fine. He wasn't like a great third baseman, but he could handle it. He wasn't the liability that he is in right field, because when the Cardinals got Arenado, not only did they move Gorman from third base, his position, then Walker moved from third base, and it's been a disaster for him in right field. And Gorman's getting worse at second rather than better. So the Cardinals already have a logjam at second base, and Brendan Donovan's in the middle of it, although they're going to move him around as they should. Thomas Sejace is a second baseman. He can play shortstop. He can also play some third base as he did last year. So there's a guy, he'll be on the club in 2025, Sejace, and you're going to have to find plenty of playing time for him. And third base is one of those spots he can be. Remember the Cardinals made that trade where they shipped Jack Flaherty to Baltimore and they got the lefty pitcher, Drew Rom. They got another pitcher, and then they got Cesar Prieto, an infielder. He's played second. He's played short. And last year, at Memphis, they put him a lot more at third base than they had in the past. I think he started like 65 games at Memphis last season. Listen, he doesn't have a lot of power, but he hits for average and gets on base. And if they're ever going to, if the Cardinals are ever going to take a look at Cesar Prieto, it's going to be in 2025. If not, then why do they even, why is he there? Like, what's the point of all this? He's done enough to warrant a look, I believe, and I hope he gets it. But again, that just adds more and more and more traffic on that infield. And if you clear third base, you've got an available slot for any number of players. J.J. Weatherhole, who's the seventh overall pick in the draft in 2024, and a really exciting offensive player. I can't wait till he gets up here. He was drafted as a shortstop. That's what he played at West Virginia. But the scouts all said, don't know that he's got a shortstop arm. He's probably going to have to move to second. So here you go again, right? If he moves to second base, the crowd gets a little larger. And I thought, well, maybe Weatherholt can factor in at third base. If you're a shortstop in college, you had to have an arm, right? Worthy of making throws from shortstop. But the scouts say no. And he may not have that good, strong arm you want in a third baseman. So, as usual, the Cardinals have got themselves in a situation where there are a lot of players and not enough jobs, and maybe not enough good players and not enough jobs. So that's why it makes all the sense in the world to make the move with Arenado, but it's not that easy. It's really not that easy. And I hope I'm wrong about this. I don't think I will be, but if you're thinking about, well, oh, you trade him, boy, you'll get a real bounty for Arenado. Maybe 2 years ago, maybe after 23, there was still more value than there is now. But with the money that he's got owed to him, more on that in a minute, and the fact that he's getting older and older, and the decline is down, right? Like, what exactly do you think you're going to get for him? And I'm not saying you're going to get, a few cases of baseballs. But if you think you're going to, like, oh, man, we got that team's number two prospect and their number three prospect. And we got a young outfielder that there's no room for him. So he'll play a lot here. This is good. I don't know, man. I'd say lower your expectations. You got a declining third baseman offensively and defensively who's only going to get older and is only going to level off and fall down performance-wise more and more. And if you look at what they owe him, Colorado still is paying the Cardinals $5 million in 2025 and $5 million in 2026 as part of his salary. They're picking up $5 million in each of the next two seasons. So I'm going to subtract that now because it's not the Cardinals. The Cardinals aren't paying the full tab for the next two seasons. So he'll make $27 million in 2025 and $22 million in 2026. And then when they made the trade as part of getting Arenado to agree to the trade, they gave him an extra year. This is just the Cardinals. Has nothing to do with the Rockies. They gave him an extra year, $15 million salary in 2027. So basically, if you factor in or you subtract the money that the Rockies will pay, a total of $10 million over the next two seasons, basically, Arenado's got 3 years left on his deal for a guaranteed $64 million. And I keep repeating it. So he's getting old. He's in decline, big salary, yada, yada, yada. The Cardinals, I think, to move him, again, you're going to have to make him happy by at least giving him a chance to play for someone that's got a hope, that gives him hope of a return to the playoffs. I mean, he ain't going to, like, okay some deal to a bad team, although he may look around and say, this is probably a good time to get out of here. So only he knows what kind of deal he would accept. Only he knows that, and his agent. They're the only ones who can determine that. But I can't imagine why he would want to stay here. Do you? Seriously. If I'm missing something, let me know. Why would he want to stay here given his temperament, the way he hates losing, the frustration of a whole career filled with losing and not enough team success. The game's harder for him now. He beats himself up because he doesn't hit for power the way he used to and all that stuff. And he does work hard. There's no dog in him, but it's just not what it was. And I don't think he's going to handle losing very well or rebuilding very well. And I know I'm being redundant now, but that's the point. Why would he, that's what the reason I'm being redundant is because it needs to be restated. The part about why would he want to stay here? Like, why? I mean, Busch Stadium ain't going to be rocking the way when it was when he came here or when he was a visiting player. Man, I'd love to play in this place. Look at this. Oh my gosh, fans are just crazy over baseball. The energy in the stadium. Well, that's not for now. That's not true. It'll be restored in time, but it's not true now. So I would think he'd want to get out of here, and hopefully the Cardinals can find a fit, a team that also would give Arenado hope that he can play for a winner. The standard for that is up to him. But I would think the Cardinals would have to eat some of that salary. My goodness. I mean, Colorado's still eating some of the salary, the contract he signed with them. $64 million. Listen, man, I'm not, this isn't like some game show. I can't guess. This ain't the Price is Right. I can't guess like how much the Cardinals will have to eat to make a deal happen. I do know this, and we've talked about it before. The Cardinals ate a lot of money to get Mike Leake out of here, and they basically paid all of Dexter Fowler's final season salary, the final year of his contract. They traded him to the Angels, and I think they picked up everything except $1 million or maybe two. So we've seen them eat big double beef whopper size of contracts, right? So they're not like a policy where they refuse to do that. And the way they got to look at it, and I'm sure they are, is like, well, look, he's due $64 million. His value is way down. And even if we have to eat $20 million of that, we're still going to come out ahead in the long term because we're not obligated to pay him the full price through 2027. And I'm just using $20 million as a hypothetical because I have no idea. But I would think the Cardinals would be motivated to pick up a big part of the tab. And maybe by picking up a bigger part of the tab, a really big part of the tab, maybe they, if a team really wants them, maybe the Cardinals get more in the trade exchange. Maybe they get more value in what's coming back to St. Louis. So there's a way to work it out. But I think it's in everybody's best interest. The player, the Cardinals, Cardinals players, young guys who need a chance to play, and some of whom have a background at third base. It's in everybody's best interest to make this deal that would make Nolan Arenado happy, and the Cardinals can kind of really start over without Goldie or Arenado. And my theory is that will compel some of their younger players, but guys who have been around a while, like Brendan Donovan, a good example. It's time for some new leadership to take over that clubhouse, new personality in that clubhouse. And they have some people that I think have that capability, but they were deferring to Goldie and Arenado. Well, it's going to be their team now. And I think one bonus about getting Arenado out of here and letting Goldie walk is that you need to cultivate new leadership. You need your next generation. It's already the current generation, most of these guys. But you got to do this over in terms of your clubhouse culture and the fact that you want young players to take charge. It's their time, right? Another reason to do it. Well, that's all I got on my mind for now about this, but the Arenado thing is, it's complex. You know, there's a lot there, but got to do it. Got to do it. And he'd be nuts to want to stay here under these circumstances because he'd be miserable. So I think he's motivated to do it, and I think the Cardinals are motivated to do it as well. There's a way to work it out when both sides are motivated. Have a wonderful day. Thank you, as always, for watching The Bernie Show here on YouTube.